Welcome back. We are on episode 6. That means I have been doing this for a month and a half already, which kind of flew by. But today I am going to talk about some mobile board games that I've been really playing a lot. And I want to go through my homebrew experience in my brew day I had last weekend. Maybe I'll throw in my grain bill, which is just the grains that I used for this recipe, the hops, just run through my recipe and how happy I was with the product. A side note, if you want to go straight to the homebrew stuff, skip to about minute 21 to 22. But I'm Eddie Stanton, and this is House Rules and Homebrews. So last week I did my episode of Yes, No, Maybe, and my yes, Evil Ted 2, the board game, has not been funded yet. And it really doesn't look like it's going to be funded. There's about 3 days left as of today, and it's still shy. I think it's like $80,000. They might be 50 to 60% funded. So it's looking like it's going to be a no as far as funding, but it was still my yes last week. But I just wanted to talk about that before we got into what I really, really want to get into, which is mobile board gaming. And it has been growing in popularity, I feel like, especially with, I mean, Asmodee Digital. They've been a big one, and they've been making, remaking or, I guess, transferring games onto a mobile platform. The big ones I know of, which are two games I will talk about today, are Ticket to Ride and Pandemic, because they're, you know, two games that most everybody knows, board gamers or non-board gamers alike. But there's also other companies, whether they're just a normal company that made one or two games that are also making a board game version of the games that they make. And Direwolf Digital, I think, is another company that's kind of up and coming with things like that, converting these games into mobile games. Now, I'm not talking about these games that are like companions, because I know there's a lot of games. Like, there's a Gloomhaven companion, and there's a companion for Arkham Horror, and there's a lot of these. I know Renegade Games actually has a companion for a lot of their games, but we're not talking about those games, or we're not talking about those tools, because that's really what they are. They're tools. They're not a game themselves. I just want to go and talk about the games that I have really been playing a lot over the past few weeks as far as mobiles. There's some good stuff out there. I feel like a good place to start is Ticket to Ride. Ticket to Ride is a game. It's like that next step game. So it's a game that can get you into like the hobby of board gaming, and it's that next step from, say, a game like Monopoly. You grow up playing that Monopoly game, and it gets super old super fast. And Ticket to Ride is that, like I said, that next step game. It's a Euro-style game, so a point-style game with a nice, beautiful board. And it's easy to play and easy to learn. And there's no dice rolls, so it really, if say you just started playing, you've only played Monopoly and things like that, you're so used to moving with a dice, rolling and moving a certain number. So that kind of introduces people into not using dice and not really luck. More of a, you know, a hand building or a deck building type thing. But this is also a mobile game, and it's been out for a while. I don't know if it was one of their first that Asmodee Digital did make into a mobile game, but they did very well. Now, it does, I think it's like $10 to buy. So it's something, and I know it's we'll spend $100 on a board game, but when it comes to a digital game, we really don't want to, especially me, I really don't want to spend $10 on a mobile game. And I don't really know why that is. It's kind of odd, you know. I bought Gloomhaven for $150, and I won't buy Ticket to Ride for $10. But I did buy Ticket to Ride for $10, and it kind of put me on that path to pay for these games, because there's a lot of free ones out there, and they're not all bad. There's some good free games, and I have them as well. But Ticket to Ride, and I don't think there's many free games from, like, Asmodee Digital. There's one, it's a solo game. It's, I don't know how to say it, so you guys are probably going to correct me. It's like Honorum? Is that how you say that? That solo card game where you're trying to, like, put three in a row with different symbols and unlock these doors, but these monsters come out and just start taking your cards. But yeah, that's a free one from them. But let's get back to Ticket to Ride. Ticket to Ride is a really, it's simple to play, and it's the same way on the mobile version, and it's pretty smooth. Like you feel like you don't really miss a beat. It has everything you could want: the beautiful colors of Ticket to Ride, the beautiful board, and the only thing you're missing is, you know, the plastic chunks of trains in your hand, which I do like. I like the sound of those trains just kind of colliding together as you place them on the board. But it's a pretty good and pretty solid version of Ticket to Ride, and it's another way to, you know, introduce somebody into that. So you could take this and just do that whole passing, you know, pass your phone from one to another, and take turns that way. And what I have actually done is I, like, cast my phone onto my TV, and I've done this for a few board game, like mobile board games, where we'll still be passing the phone around, but everybody can kind of see what's going on all the time because it's on the TV. And it worked really well, and it worked especially well with Ticket to Ride, because sometimes with these mobile games, we kind of just keep clicking because we don't really know the rules. We're just kind of doing what it allows us to do. But it's so, you figure out the rules in Ticket to Ride, whether you've played it or not, very quickly, like what you need to place certain trains and what trains can go where, and the different colors, and what you need as far as cards, and what the special cards do, and what the route cards do. Like, you learn it very fast and very easily. So it's not like a lot of mobile board games where you're just kind of clicking, because there's a highlighted box around it, so you click that one because you know you can play it. So that's, I really, really like Ticket to Ride in its mobile platform because of that. And it's an easy game to just cast on the TV and just play. And I found myself doing this a lot with these board games. It's such a cool idea to, you know, we're bringing board games into this next, you know, step where, yeah, it's not a board, it's not around the table, but it's still people sitting around looking at the TV and playing something together. And it just reminds me of, I mean, it really reminds me of sitting around a table and playing, but it also reminds me of, like, the old regular Nintendo or Sega Genesis days where it would be you and a friend just mashing buttons on your wired controller while playing Street Fighter or Super Mario or Sonic the Hedgehog. And I think that's what got me into board games in the first place, is I really miss that kind of social interaction in gaming. And you really don't, You don't get that anymore. You don't, there's a lot of, people say what they want. So I don't know if you've ever played, if you play an online game, people say some dumb stuff. And it's not things that you would say if you're next to a friend. I think like Halo was an innovative game when it came to like multiplayer online. And it was great. Like it was really great. But I still think when that came out, people had a mindset of what you were supposed to do as far as talking. People were still in that mode that of somebody sitting next to you and playing, and you're kind of playing like that, but over, you know, the air. And now it's not like that. People are just screaming, and it's a lot of people don't even put on their mic anymore. So you're just playing an online multiplayer game and not talking. And I just really miss that social interaction of gaming. And I think it's something good. It's something good for families. And it's so easy in these mobile platforms. And I know I kind of went off on a crazy tangent with this, but that's how I feel. Like this is a game that, say 10 years from now or 5 years from now, when my daughter's ready to play board games, this is something that I would do with her. Sit on the couch, maybe we'll eat some chips, something like that, and we'll just be casting Ticket to Ride and passing a phone back and forth, because we're still talking, we're still interacting, and that's great. And that's all I had to say about that. That Ticket to Ride is a very good mobile platformer. It's a very good board game altogether. But I say you guys go check that out, and especially if you like Ticket to Ride, and try doing what I'm saying. And whether it's a free board game that you could have, anything that you can just do that whole pass thing with your cell phone and just interact, you know, interact with people. Because we are definitely lacking that. So let's continue up that metaphorical staircase. What I mean by that is that the next game is kind of the next step from the last game. At least that's how it was for me. I really started with Ticket to Ride, and then the next game that I played on the table was Pandemic. That kind of brought me into a different type of game and a more in-depth game. Still an easy game to learn. It's still kind of hand building and stuff like that. So it's the same type of mechanisms in this game, but it was the next game that brought me even further. And I would say this is probably the game that made me tumble into board games, because there's enough complexity with this game to make you, you know, want to see what else is out there for you, and what other games are and what they have to offer. This game is definitely, Ticket to Ride is great, and it is fun. It's an easy game, and it's great for families. But this Pandemic is the game that really, really pushed me into the board game, and it is. In my opinion, it is the best gateway game to get somebody into this hobby. But Asmodee Digital, at least I believe it's Asmodee Digital, has also made the Pandemic, the Pandemic app, and it is very good. The only, I don't play this one as much. It's very good, and again, it mimics the game itself, and you could do the same thing. You could cast it on the TV and pass your phone around and stuff like that. But it's not something that I find myself really enjoying, like single player, just because you are then controlling. It's just a game that I, even on the table, you can play Pandemic, you know, by yourself, but it's not a game that's as fun by yourself, making decisions and things like that. It's just a very, very fun game to play as a group. Whereas Ticket to Ride has a really good AI you know, you're playing computers. I'm pretty sure, which I haven't, but I'm pretty sure you can play, you know, online against other people. But this was another one I did want to bring up because Pandemic is a phenomenal game, and it's one that definitely has stood the test of time. It's something that is still on the shelves. It's something that people still play weekly or monthly, and it's a game that really makes people get together and start their journey on this rough road and expensive road of the board game hobbyists. But it's one that you should really check out. And again, it costs money. I think this is another one that might be $10. But if it's something that, especially if you have kids and you don't want to like set up the game, you just say after dinner one night, you want to play a quick game, a quote unquote quick game of Pandemic, you could just, again, screencast this, pass it between your family members. It's another really good way to, you know, interact and talk to your family and talk to your friends while playing a board game digitally. And I can't stress how much I really like what this technology has done to the board game industry. I mean, I've only really been in it for maybe, I don't know, 8 years, and I can see just the amount of change that it has went through and how they are bringing it to more people, how companies are bringing board games in to just more people. And that's another one that I definitely like, and it's fun to play, it's easy to play, but yeah, go check that one out too. This last one is probably the one that I played the most. I love the game, and it's not one that is very well known, I think. Like, it's not something that's, it might be on a lot of people's, like, the tip of their tongue, but I highly doubt it. And the only reason I found it is because I'm part of a Facebook group called Solo Board Gamers, because I really, really enjoy just playing board games. So I try to find a game that can be played solo. And this one is probably one of my favorite to do that, but it's called One Deck Dungeon. And it costs, I think this one was maybe $6 or $7, so it's a little cheaper. But if you just want a simple dungeon crawling game that it's very fun, and it feels like the way that they do time through the, like how much time it takes to travel through a dungeon and how you take damage, everything works very well. And it is, I guess the only thing it does lack is I really like, so it's a dice game, and the whole premise is you're upgrading your character as you're going through this dungeon, and you're going to be adding dice, and the, what the dice are is they're different types of attacks. So whether it's a combat attack like a sword, or a magic attack, which is, you know, blue. They have like running attacks, or where you would flee, or you know, try to get out of a circumstance. That's pink. But you're trying to kind of build your character up with different abilities, as far as potions and upgrades and different ways to manipulate the dice rolls. And you're also increasing your dice and upgrading your character that way. So one really satisfying part of this board game, at least for me, is toward the end, as you're leveling down or up in this dungeon, you're gaining more and more dice, and by the time you're at the final boss of a dungeon, you just have a whole bunch of dice, and you're throwing, there's nothing more satisfying than throwing a whole bunch of dice and just listening to them crackle across the table and bounce around. It's a very rewarding experience at that point. You feel like you've accomplished something. Now, as far as the app, you do really kind of lose that, because you're just, you know, tapping the screen and the dice are rolling and it's random, and you lose that. But it's still, It's a very good game, both the board game, or it's real more a card game, and the app. It is definitely one of my go-to solo games. Like when I'm home, I'm like, you know what? I feel like there's nothing on TV. There's nothing I want to watch. Just how about I look into something to play, and it's usually this game. One, it's easy to set up, even, you know, without the app. It's very easy to set up, and it's a very rewarding experience, especially if you make it through the dungeon and win. But even if you don't, as you're leveling up and seeing your character card kind of grow with different abilities and more dice, it's just a super rewarding experience. And that was that one. If you do want to play a solo game, it's something you really should look into. And if you don't want the app, look into, you know, the actual game itself. I think it's a pretty cheap game in itself, maybe $20. But that was really, yeah, they're the ones that I've been playing the most as far as, you know, tabletop mobile games. It's been really easy to do, especially, you know, you can kind of set it aside, and I have so much stuff going on right now. You can play part of a game and kind of, you know, put it on the back burner, and then a few hours later, maybe play a couple more minutes. And it's just an easy way to kind of spend time and relax, you know, step back and just relax a little bit. But now on to my Brew Day adventure. A few days ago, I brewed my very first stout, and I had no idea how it was going to come out because it is so different than what anything that I've ever brewed, as far as, you know, darkness and in the malts that I used. I do want to go over the malts that I used, why I used what I used. I'll kind of basically go over my recipe without really getting into my recipe. I'll just kind of tell you about the malts, the yeast, the hops, or the hops that I use, and then the stuff, the adjuncts that I'm going to add, you know, later on. So this is going to be a tiramisu stout. There's a little craft brewery near us that has something called Keegan's Mother's Milk that my wife really enjoyed. It's a milk stout. And then there was another one. We used to have a house in New Jersey, and there was a little place in Hackettstown, New Jersey, called Zigmeister Brewery, and they had a tiramisu stout, and my wife really, really liked that. So I thought for her, I would try to make this tiramisu stout. I am not a big fan of stouts. I will drink them, and I don't drink them often, but, you know, this was really a thing that, one, I had to do. I had to do because I feel like in order to really brew beer, I have to kind of brew everything. Whether or not I like it, I have to know how to brew it. You know, it made sense to me that it's something that I had to do. And eventually I want to do lagering, which is even harder. You need more, a much more controlled environment when you lager, because you're fermenting at lower temperatures, which is a lot harder to do, especially with the equipment that I have for fermentation, which is nothing. but let's go through my grain bill, because I was asked by a few people what the recipe was, and I didn't want to say anything to them because I kind of wanted to steer them toward this podcast. So I will go through the grains that I used for this. So the biggest chunk of it was my pale malt, my Maris Otter, and that was where I'm going to get most of my alcohol content from. And the flake wheat, I used a little bit of flaked wheat, which will help with that head retention, hopefully give me a nice white head. I don't know if you ever see like that stout, you know, you pour that stout and you have, it's just dark black and then nice white head. That's what I'm really shooting for with this beer. So that wheat, the flaked wheat that I use, will hopefully, you know, keep that head up there and make the beer look nice longer And that's the hope, so we'll find out. The next three were more so, there's some fermentation in, or there's some sugars that are going to be extracted in two of these, not much though, like very little. So once you start getting into your caramel and chocolate malts, and you're getting a lot more color and like bitterness than you are with like a pale malt, that's where you're getting all of your sugars for that yeast to convert into alcohol. So these are more for kind of bitterness and a little bit of flavors and definitely color. The last one I'm going to say is definitely color. So the first of these we'll say darkening malts, if that makes sense. We did chocolate malt 350. So that's not the darkest chocolate malt you can get, but it's still pretty dark. Some caramel malt, Level Bond 80, which again isn't the darkest caramel malt you can get, but it's up there. I mean, they have like caramel 4, so the higher that number is. So if you didn't notice, I said chocolate malt 350 and then caramel malt 80, the higher that number is going to be the darker. That's the darker that grain is going to be, and the more the beer itself is going to take on that real dark flavor or a real dark color. But the last one, as far as my grain, I used a very, very little of it, but Black Patent, it's super, super dark. I'm pretty sure it's like as dark as you can go, but that was how I rounded off my grain bill, and the color came out very, very good. And actually my brew house efficiency was pretty good. So for the first time, what I did is I brew in a bag, and a lot of times your efficiency with brewing a bag isn't the greatest. So I tried to do different things to kind of bring that up. I mean, I've had efficiency as low as like 50%, but on this it was like 75-80%, and it was really, really good. And what I did is I took, after I got done mashing up and having that water, 150 some odd degree water and grains mix for an hour, I took that bag out and put it, kind of stringed it up over a bucket and let it drain out for a little bit, and then rinse those grains with, 150, 160 degree water to kind of help, just kind of get more of that sugar out. And I let it sit there for a while. Like, I heated up my boil until I started boiling. Probably 5-10 minutes into the boil is when I actually, finished that up and dumped a good amount of liquid into that kettle. So I did, I did gain a lot of sugars out of that. And I think this is how I'm going to, not just stouts, I think this is how I'm going to move forward from now on with all of my, all of my brews, here on out. But as for, my hops, I just did one really small addition of hops. It was Northern Brewer. And toward the end of my boil, so 10 minutes into the end of my boil, my wife likes a milk stout, and the way you make that a milk stout is you add lactose. So I added a good amount, almost a pound of lactose at the end of it. And that was it, that was what I did Saturday. But what made this brew day even more, the color was perfect, but what made it the biggest success is I've been close, but never right on point for my gravity reading. And my original gravity reading for this beer was like dead on what I was shooting for. It was 1.060, so it's a pretty thick, pretty thick liquid. But it's exactly what I was shooting for. So my hope is in the next few weeks, I'll check this gravity again, and fermentation is going well, and that drops down to, you know, 1.3, something like, or 1.03, something like that. And I'm looking at a 5.5 to 6% beer. But that is, I mean, that's the hope. So far, it's went so great. So I do not expect, it never goes this great for me. There's always something that's going to mess up. Like, it's going to be contaminated or something. I just know it. But the last thing, I'll kind of tell you how I'm moving ahead now. So at bottling, I'm going to be adding chocolate and vanilla extract. And that's going to hopefully give it a nice chocolatey flavor. And I'm also going to be adding cold brewed coffee. And that's going to put that coffee taste in there. So I should have a decent, as long as I do it right, I should have a decent, you know, chocolate coffee taste, which should give me that tiramisu type taste. So I've used extract before with an IPA that I added a little bit of grapefruit. Well, when I say a little bit, I added like way too much grapefruit extract in it, and it tasted almost like soap. So I am very, very nervous on this last step. I have to look into like what I'm going to do to really test how I want to move ahead when it comes to adding, you know, the extracts and the coffee. And I think I found a pretty decent idea. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to take some milk, just normal milk from a grocery store, and I'm going to add cold brew coffee and extracts and have my wife and I'll taste it until we get that taste that we are looking for, and then kind of scale that up to my batch size. And I'm hoping, I'm really, really hoping that that works. It's better than what I did for my first extract, you know, trying to brew with these extracts. But I'm just hoping. And I do think I'm going to set a few aside and not add anything to them, and then maybe even test even further with just them. But I kind of wanted to have a base too. So I feel like if I don't add the extracts and the flavoring into a stout and I have a decent base stout, then that's something that I could brew again if somebody doesn't want a tiramisu stout, but it's just a decent milk stout, you know? And then even if I want to go into something like anything, stouts are, there's endless possibilities with stouts. So I can make a nice cookie thing for Christmas or mint Girl Scout flavor thing. But there's just an endless possibility with stouts. And I feel like if this is actually going to work out to be a good base, then maybe I want to keep this recipe. Maybe I just want to, you know, have that milk stout in there and then make a specialty stout for whatever season it is. And that was it. It came out better, way better than expected. And let me know. I definitely want to hear your opinion on how to test these extracts and cold brew coffee, because I know a little, especially, well, I won't say especially, because both of them, a little goes a long way. Coffee can overpower your taste buds very quickly. So you definitely don't want to overdo it, because then you ruin your whole batch. But that was my brew day, and I was super excited to share that with you. But that's it for today, and I should be talking to you next week. I have a lot of things going on at home, but there should be definitely a next episode. And I actually might be pulling in an interview or two for some games on Kickstarter. But until next time, play more games and brew more beers. See ya.